that can completely fill a room full of CDs from top to bottom. But computers and robots have radically reduced the time and effort necessary to complete this tedious Herculean task. One approach is the slice-and-dice approach, which involves slicing up the brain into thousands of slides and then using microscopes to reconstruct the connections between all the neurons. A much faster approach has recently been proposed by the scientists at Stanford University, who have pioneered a technique called optogenetics. This method involves first isolating a protein called opsin, which is involved in eyesight. When you shine a light on this gene within a neuron, it causes the neuron to fire. Using genetic engineering, one can implant the gene for opsin into neurons that you want to study. By shining a light on a section of a mouse's brain, a researcher can cause the neurons involved with a certain muscle activity to fire, and the mouse begins to exhibit a specific activity, such as running around. In this way, one can see the precise neural pathways used to control certain types of behaviors. For example, this ambitious project may help to unravel the secret of mental illness, which is one of the most debilitating of all human maladies. By mapping the human brain, we might be able to isolate the origin of this affliction. For example, all of us talk to ourselves silently. When we do, the left brain, which controls language, consults the prefrontal cortex. But in schizophrenics, we now know the left brain activates without permission from the prefrontal cortex, which is the conscious part of the brain. Since the left brain does not talk to the prefrontal cortex, the schizophrenic thinks the voices in his or her head are real. Even with these revolutionary new techniques, it still may take several more decades of hard work before scientists have a detailed map of the human brain. But when this is finally achieved, perhaps late in the 21st century, would this mean that we can upload consciousness into a computer and send it to the stars? Is the soul just information? If we die and our connectome lives on, then are we in some sense immortal? If our mind can be digitized, then is the soul just information? If we could put all the neural circuits and memories of the brain onto a disk and then upload it into a supercomputer, will the uploaded brain function and act as the real brain? Will it be indistinguishable from the real thing? Some people find this idea repulsive, because if you upload your mind into a computer, then you will spend an eternity trapped inside a sterile machine. Some think it is a fate worse than dying. There was one episode of Star Trek featuring a super advanced civilization where the pure consciousness of an alien was kept inside a glowing sphere. Eons ago, the aliens had given up their physical bodies and lived inside these spheres ever since. The aliens became immortal, but one of these aliens longed to have a body once again, to be able to feel real sensations and passions, even if it meant forcibly taking over someone else's body. Although living inside a computer may sound unappealing to some, there is no reason you couldn't have all the sensation of a living, breathing human being. Although your connectome would reside inside a mainframe computer, it could control a robot that looks identical to you. You feel everything the robot experiences, so that, for all intents and purposes, you have the sensation that you are living inside a real body, potentially even one with superpowers. Everything that the robot sees and feels is relayed back to the mainframe computer and incorporated into your consciousness. So controlling the robot avatar from the mainframe is indistinguishable from your actually being inside the avatar. In this way, you could explore distant planets. Your superhuman avatar will be able to withstand blistering temperatures on sun-scorched planets or the freezing temperatures on distant icy moons. A starship carrying the mainframe that houses your connectome could be sent to a new solar system. As the starship reaches a suitable planet, your avatar could be sent down to explore it, even if the planet has a poisonous atmosphere. An even more advanced form of uploading your mind into a computer was envisioned by computer scientist Hans Moravec. When I interviewed him, he claimed that his method of uploading the human mind could even be done without losing consciousness. First, you would be placed on a hospital gurney next to a robot. Then a surgeon would take individual neurons from your brain and create a duplicate of these neurons, made of transistors, inside the robot. A cable would connect these transistorized neurons to your brain. As time goes by, more and more neurons are removed from your brain and duplicated in the robot. Because your brain is connected to the robot brain, you are fully conscious even as more and more neurons are replaced by transistors. Eventually, without losing consciousness, your entire brain and all its neurons are replaced by transistors. Once all 100 billion neurons have been duplicated, the connection between you and the artificial brain is finally cut. When you gaze back at the stretcher, you see your old body lacking its brain, while your consciousness now exists inside a robot. But the question remains, is that really you? To most scientists, if a robot can duplicate all of your behavior down to the very last gesture, with all your memories and habits intact, and is indistinguishable from the original person in every way, then they would say that it is you for all intents and purposes. As we've seen, the distances between stars are so great that it will take several lifetimes to reach even those closest in our galactic neighborhood. So multi-generational travel, life extension, and the search for immortality may all play an essential role in the exploration of our universe. Beyond the question of immortality lies a larger question. How far should we extend not just our lifespan, but our human body? Even more possibilities exist if we alter our genetic heritage. Given the rapid advances in BCI, brain-computer interface, and genetic engineering, it may be possible to create enhanced bodies with new skills and potentials. One day, we might enter the post-human era, and this might be the best way to explore the universe. Aliens might have capabilities indistinguishable from telekinesis, ESP, and immortality. They may have powers that seem magical. They will be spiritually advanced creatures. Perhaps they will have solved the riddle of the quantum and will be able to walk through walls. Gee, they sound sort of like angels. David Grinspoon. Chapter 11. Transhumanism and Technology. In the movie Iron Man, suave industrialist Tony Stark dons a sleek, computerized suit of armor, bristling with missiles, bullets, flares, and explosives. It quickly transforms a frail human into a powerful superhero. But the real magic is on the inside of the suit, which is crammed with the latest computer technology, all controlled by a direct connection with Tony Stark's brain. At the speed of thought, he can rocket into the sky or launch his incredible array of weaponry. As fanciful as Iron Man may be, it is now possible to build a version of this device. This is not just an academic exercise, since one day we may have to alter and enhance our bodies using cybernetics or even change our genetic makeup in order to survive in hostile exoplanetary environments. Transhumanism, instead of being a branch of science fiction or a fringe movement, may become an essential part of our very existence. Furthermore, as robots become increasingly powerful and even surpass us in intelligence, we may have to merge with them or face being replaced by our creations. Let us explore these various possibilities, especially as they relate to exploring and colonizing the universe. Super strength. The world was shocked in 1995 when Christopher Reeve, the handsome actor who played Superman in the movies, was tragically paralyzed from the neck down in an accident. Reeve, who soared into space on the screen, was confined permanently to a wheelchair and was able to breathe only with the help of a respirator, His dream was to use modern technology to regain control of his limbs. He died in 2004, just a decade before this was accomplished. At the 2014 World Cup in Sao Paulo, Brazil, a man kicked a soccer ball to start the games, an event witnessed by a billion people. This, by itself, was not remarkable. What was remarkable was that this man was paralyzed. Professor Miguel Nicolelis of Duke University had inserted a chip into the man's brain. The chip was connected to a portable computer that controlled his exoskeleton. By simply thinking, this paralyzed individual was able to walk and kick the ball. When I interviewed Dr. Nicolelis, he said that when he was a child, he was mesmerized by the Apollo mission to the moon. His goal was to create another sensation, like the moon landing. Wiring that paralyzed patient so he could kick the ball at the World Cup was a dream come true. It was his moonshot. I once interviewed John Donahue of Brown University, one of the pioneers of this approach. He told me that it takes a bit of training, like riding a bicycle. But soon his patients are able to control the motion of an exoskeleton and can do simple tasks, such as grabbing a cup of water, operating household appliances, controlling a wheelchair, and surfing the web. This is possible because a computer is able to recognize certain brain patterns associated with specific body movements. The computer can then activate the exoskeleton so that these electrical impulses are converted into action. One of his paralyzed patients was elated that she could grab a cup of soda and drink from it, something that was previously beyond her capability. Work done at Duke, Brown, Johns Hopkins, and other universities has given the gift of mobility to people who had long given up hope that they would ever move again. And the U.S. military has devoted more than $150 million in a program called Revolutionary Prosthetics to sponsor these devices for the benefit of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, many of them suffering from spinal cord injuries. Eventually, thousands of people who are confined to wheelchairs and beds, whether as the result of warfare, car accidents, disease, or sports injuries, may be able to have the use of their limbs back again. Besides exoskeletons, another possibility is to strengthen the human body biologically to live on a planet with greater gravity. This possibility was raised when scientists discovered a gene that causes muscles to expand. This was first found in mice, when a genetic mutation caused mice to become muscle-bound. The press dubbed it the Mighty Mouse gene. Later, the human form of this gene was found and was dubbed the Schwarzenegger gene. The scientists who isolated this gene expected phone calls from doctors wishing to help their patients suffering from degenerative muscle diseases. They were surprised, however, when half the calls that came in were from bodybuilders who wanted to bulk up. And most of them did not care that this research was experimental, with unknown side effects. Already it is causing headaches for the sports industry, because it is much harder to detect than other forms of chemical enhancement. Having the ability to control one's muscle mass may prove important if we explore planets that have a gravitational field larger than the Earth's. So far, astronomers have found a large number of super-Earths, rocky planets within the habitable zone that might even have oceans. They seem likely candidates for human habitation, except their gravitational field can be 50% greater than Earth's. This means that it might be necessary to increase our muscles and bones in order to thrive on them. Enhancing ourselves. In addition to enhancing our muscles, scientists have begun to use this technology to sharpen our senses. People who suffer from certain kinds of deafness now have the option of using cochlear implants. These devices are remarkable, capable of transforming the sound waves coming into the ear into electrical signals that can be sent to the auditory nerve and then the brain. Already about 500,000 people have chosen to have these sensors implanted. And for some of those who are blind, an artificial retina can restore a limited amount of vision. This device can be located either in an external camera or can be placed directly on the retina. This device translates visual images into electrical impulses that the brain can then translate back into visual imagery. One example, the Argus 2, consists of a tiny video camera placed in a person's glasses. The images are then sent to an artificial retina, which relays the signals to the optic nerve. This device can create images of about 60 pixels, and an improved version, now being tested, has a resolution of 240 pixels. By contrast, the human eye can recognize the equivalent of about 1 million pixels, and a person needs at least 600 pixels to identify faces and familiar objects. A German company is experimenting with another artificial retina with 1,500 pixels that, if successful, might allow a vision-impaired person to function almost normally. Blind individuals who have tried these artificial retinas have been amazed that they can see colors and outlines of images. It is only a matter of time before we have artificial retinas that can rival human eyesight. And beyond that, it may be possible for an artificial retina to see colors corresponding to things that are invisible to the human eye. For example, people are often burned in the kitchen because a hot metal pot looks identical to a cold one. This is because our eyes are incapable of seeing infrared heat radiation. But artificial retinas and goggles can be constructed that can easily detect it, such as night vision goggles used by the military. So, with artificial retinas, a person may have the ability to see that heat signature and also see other forms of radiation that are invisible to us. This supervision, in turn, may prove invaluable on other planets. On distant worlds, conditions will be radically different. The atmosphere may be dark, hazy, or obscured by dust or impurities. It might be possible to create artificial retinas that can see through a Martian dust storm via infrared heat detectors. On distant moons where sunlight is almost non-existent, these artificial retinas could intensify whatever reflected light there is. Another example would be a device that detects ultraviolet radiation, which is harmful and can cause skin cancer, but is common throughout the universe. On the Earth, we are protected from intense UV light from the sun by our atmosphere. But on Mars, the UV light is unfiltered. Because UV light is invisible, we are often unaware when we are exposed to harmful levels. But someone with supervision on Mars could immediately see if the UV light is harmful. On a planet like Venus, which is perpetually clouded over, these artificial retinas would be able to use UV light to navigate around the terrain, in the same way that bees detect UV light from the sun to find their way on an overcast day. Another application of supervision would be telescopic and microscopic vision. Tiny special lenses would enable us to see distant objects, or minuscule objects and cells, without having to lug around bulky telescopes and microscopes. This type of technology may also give us the power of telepathy and telekinesis. Already, it is possible to create a chip that can pick up our brainwaves, decipher some of them, and then transmit this information to the Internet. For example, my colleague Stephen Hawking, who suffers from ALS, has lost all motor functions, including the movement of his fingers. Today, a chip has been placed in his glasses that can pick up brainwaves that are then sent to a laptop and a computer. In this way, he can type messages mentally, albeit slowly. From there, it is a short step to telekinesis, the ability to move objects with the mind. Using this same technology, one can connect the brain directly to a robot or other mechanical device that can then execute our mental commands. It's easy to imagine that, in the future, telepathy and telekinesis will be the norm. We will interact with machines by sheer thought. Our mind will be able to turn on the lights, activate the internet, dictate letters, play video games, communicate with friends, call for a car, purchase merchandise, conjure any movie, all just by thinking. Astronauts of the future may use the power of their minds to pilot their spaceships or explore distant planets. Cities may rise from the deserts of Mars, all due to master builders who mentally control the work of robots. Of course, this process of enhancing ourselves is not new, but has been happening for all of human existence. Throughout history, we see examples of how humans have used artificial means to enhance our power and influence. Clothing, tattoos, makeup, headdresses, ceremonial robes, feathers, glasses, hearing aids, microphones, headphones, etc. In fact, it seems to be a universal feature of all human societies that we try to tinker with our bodies, especially to increase our chances of reproductive success. The difference, however, between enhancements of the past and the future is that, as we explore the universe, enhancements may be the key to surviving in different environments. In the future, we might live in the mental age, where our thoughts control the world around us. The power of the mind. Another milestone in brain research was achieved when scientists, for the first time in history, were able to record a memory. Scientists at Wake Forest and the University of Southern California put electrodes on the hippocampus of mice, where short-term memories are processed. They recorded the impulses within the hippocampus as the mice executed simple tasks, such as learning to drink water from a tube. Later, after the mice had forgotten this task, their hippocampus was stimulated by the recording, and the mice remembered immediately. Primate memories have also been recorded with similar results. The next target may be to record the memories of patients suffering from Alzheimer's disease. Then we can place a brain pacemaker, or memory chip, on their hippocampus, which will flood it with memories of who they are, where they live, and who their relatives are. The military has taken a serious interest in this. In 2017, the Pentagon announced a $65 million grant to develop a tiny, advanced chip that can analyze 1 million human neurons as the brain communicates with a computer and forms memories. We will need to study and refine this technique, but by the late 21st century, it is conceivable that we might be able to upload complex memories into our brain. In principle, we might be able to transfer skills and abilities, even entire college courses, into our brain, enhancing our capabilities almost without limit. This may prove useful for astronauts of the future. When landing on a new planet or moon, there are so many details to learn and memorize about the new environment and so many technologies that have to be mastered. So uploading memories might be the most efficient way to learn entirely new information about distant worlds. But Dr. Nicolelis wants to go much farther with this technology. He told me that all these breakthroughs in neurology will eventually give rise to the BrainNet, which is the next stage in the evolution of the Internet. Instead of transmitting bits of information, BrainNet will transmit entire emotions, feelings, sensations, and memories. This could help to break down barriers between people. Often, it is hard to understand other people's point of view, their suffering and anguish. But with BrainNet, we would be able to experience firsthand the anxieties and fears that trouble others. This could revolutionize the entertainment industry. In the same way that the talkies rapidly replaced silent movies, in the future, audiences may be able to feel the emotions of the actors, to experience their pain, joy, or suffering. The movies of today may soon be obsolete. So astronauts of the future may be able to use BrainNet in important ways. They will be able to mentally communicate with other settlers, instantly exchange vital information, and amuse themselves with an entirely new form of entertainment. Also, since space exploration is potentially dangerous, they will be able to sense a person's mental condition much more accurately than before. When embarking on a new space mission to explore dangerous terrain, having BrainNet will help astronauts bond and also reveal mental problems, such as depression or anxiety. There is also the possibility of using genetic engineering to enhance the mind. At Princeton University, a gene was found in mice dubbed the smart mouse gene that increased their ability to navigate mazes. The gene is called NR2B, and it is involved in communication between the cells of the hippocampus. Researchers found that when mice lacked the NR2B gene, their memory was impaired as they navigated the maze. However, if they had extra copies of the NR2B gene, their memory was enhanced. These researchers placed mice in a shallow pan of water that had an underwater platform they could stand on. Once they found the platform, the smart mice were able to remember instantly where it was and swim directly to it when reintroduced to the environment. Ordinary mice, by contrast, could not remember the location of the platform and swam randomly. So memory enhancement is a possibility. The future of flight. Humans have always dreamed of flying like the birds. The god Mercury had tiny wings on his hat and ankles that allowed him to fly. There is also the myth of Icarus, who used wax to attach feathers to his arms in order to fly. Unfortunately, he flew too close to the sun. The wax melted, and he plunged into the ocean. But the technology of the future will finally give us the gift of flight. On a planet with a thin atmosphere and rugged terrain like Mars, perhaps the most convenient way to travel is the jetpack, a staple of science fiction cartoons and movies. It appeared in the very first Buck Rogers strip back in 1929, when Buck meets his future girlfriend while she is soaring through the air using a jetpack. In reality, the jetpack was deployed during World War II, when the Nazis needed a quick way to transport troops across a river whose bridge had been destroyed. The Nazi jetpack used hydrogen peroxide as fuel, which quickly ignites in contact with a catalyst, such as silver, to release energy and water as waste products. However, there are several problems with jetpacks. The main one is that the fuel supply lasts for only 30 seconds to a minute. In old news clips, you sometimes see daredevils using jetpacks to float in the air, such as at the 1984 Olympics. However, these tapes are carefully edited, since people float for only 30 seconds to a minute before they fall to the ground. The solution to this problem is to develop a portable power pack with enough energy to power longer periods of flight. Unfortunately, no such power supply is available at the present time. This is also the reason why we don't have ray guns. A laser can work like a ray gun, but only if you have a nuclear power plant generating the energy. However, it's impractical to have a nuclear power plant on your shoulders. So jetpacks and ray guns will not become real until we create miniature power packs, perhaps in the form of a nanobattery that can store energy at the molecular level. Another possibility, often featured in paintings and movies of angels or human mutants, is using wings like a bird. On planets with a thick atmosphere, it might be possible to simply jump, flap wings attached to your arms, and take off like a bird. The thicker the atmosphere, the greater the lift, and the easier it is to fly in the air. So the dream of Icarus could become reality. But birds have several advantages that we don't. Their bones are hollow, and their bodies are quite thin and small compared to their wingspan. Humans, on the other hand, are quite dense and heavy. The human wingspan would have to be 20 to 30 feet across, and we would need much stronger back muscles to flap them. To genetically modify someone to have wings is beyond our technical ability. At present, it is difficult to properly move a single gene, let alone the hundreds of genes necessary to create a viable wing. So while having the wings of an angel is not impossible, the final product is a long way off and will not look like the graceful paintings we are used to seeing. It was once thought that genetic engineering to modify the human race was the dream of science fiction writers, nothing more. However, a new revolutionary development has changed all that. The pace of discovery is so dramatic that scientists have hastily convened conferences to discuss slowing down the rate of these new developments. CRISPR revolution. The pace of discovery in the field of biotechnology has recently accelerated to a fever pitch with the coming of a new technology called CRISPR, clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats, which promises cheap, efficient, and precise ways to edit DNA. In the past, genetic engineering has been a slow and imprecise process. In gene therapy, for example, a good gene is inserted into a virus, which has been neutralized so it is harmless. Then the virus is inserted into the patient, where it quickly infects a person's cells and injects the DNA. The goal is to have the DNA insert itself in the proper place along the chromosome, so that the cell's defective code is replaced by the good gene. Some common diseases are caused by a single misspelling in one's DNA, including sickle cell anemia, Tay-Sachs, and cystic fibrosis. The hope is this can be corrected. The results, however, have been disappointing. Often the body considers the virus to be hostile and mounts a counteroffensive, causing harmful side effects. Also, the good gene often does not implant itself in the correct position. After a fatal incident at the University of Pennsylvania in 1999, many gene therapy experiments were terminated. CRISPR technology cuts through a lot of these complications. Actually, the basis of the technology evolved billions of years ago. Scientists were puzzled that bacteria developed very precise mechanisms to defeat an onslaught of viruses. How did bacteria recognize a deadly virus and then disarm it? They found that bacteria were able to recognize the threats because they carried a snippet of the virus's genetic material. Like a mugshot, the bacteria were able to use it to identify an invading virus. Once the bacteria recognized the genetic string, and therefore the virus, it would cut the virus at a very precise point, neutralizing it and stopping the infection in its tracks. Scientists were able to replicate this process, successfully replacing a viral sequence with other types of DNA and inserting that DNA in the target cell, making genomic surgery possible. CRISPR rapidly replaced older methods of genetic engineering, making gene editing cleaner, more accurate, and much faster. This revolution took the field of biotechnology by storm. "It just completely changes the landscape," said Jennifer Doudna, one of the pioneers. David Weiss of Emory University said, "All of this has basically happened in a year. It's incredible." Already, researchers at the Hubrecht Institute in the Netherlands have shown that they can correct a genomic error that causes cystic fibrosis. This raises hopes that many incurable genetic diseases may one day be cured. Many scientists hope that eventually some of the genes for certain forms of cancer can also be replaced using CRISPR technology, thereby stopping the growth of tumors. Bioethicists, worried about the possible misuses of this technology, have organized conferences to discuss this new science because the side effects and complications are not known, and they made a series of recommendations to try to cool down the furious pace of CRISPR research. In particular, they raised concerns that this technology may lead to germline gene therapy. There are two types of gene therapy: somatic cell gene therapy, where non-sex cells are modified so that the mutations do not spread to the next generation, and germline gene therapy, where your sex cells are altered so that all your descendants can inherit the modified gene. Germline gene therapy could, if unchecked, alter the genetic heritage of the human race. It means that once we venture among the stars, new genetic branches of the human race might emerge. Usually, this would take tens of thousands of years, but bioengineering may reduce that to a single generation if germline gene therapy becomes a reality. In summary, the dreams of science fiction writers who speculated about modifying the human race to colonize distant planets were once considered to be too unrealistic or fanciful. However, with the coming of CRISPR, these far-fetched dreams can no longer be dismissed. Still, we must engage in a thoughtful analysis of all the ethical consequences raised by this fast-moving technology. Ethics of transhumanism. These are examples of transhumanism, which advocates embracing technology to enhance our skills and capabilities. To survive and even flourish on distant worlds, we may have to alter ourselves mechanically and biologically. To transhumanists, it's not a matter of choice, but of necessity. Altering ourselves increases our chances on planets with different levels of gravity, atmospheric pressure and composition, temperature, radiation, etc. Rather than being repulsed by technology or fighting its influence, the transhumanists believe that we should embrace it. They relish the idea that we can perfect humanity. To them, the human race was a byproduct of evolution. So our bodies are a consequence of random haphazard mutations. Why not use technology to systematically improve on these quirks? Their ultimate goal is to create the post-human, a new species that can transcend humanity. Although the concept of altering our genes makes some people squeamish, Greg Stock, a biophysicist affiliated with UCLA, has emphasized that humans have been changing the genetics of the animals and plants around us for thousands of years. When I interviewed him, he pointed out that what appears natural to us today is actually a byproduct of intense selective breeding. The modern dinner table would be impossible without the skills of ancient breeders who cultivated plants and animals to suit our needs. Today's corn, for example, is a genetically modified version of maize and cannot reproduce without human intervention. The kernels or seeds do not fall off by themselves, and farmers have to remove and plant them for corn to grow. And the variety of dogs that we see around us are a byproduct of selectively breeding a single species, the gray wolf. So humans have altered the genes of scores of plants and animals, such as dogs for hunting and cows and chickens for food. In fact, if we could magically remove all the plants and animals that humans have bred over the centuries, our society would look drastically different from what it is today. As the genes for certain human traits are isolated by scientists, it will be hard to stop people from trying to tinker with them. For example, if you find out that your neighbor's children have been given genetically enhanced intelligence and they are competing with your children, there will be enormous pressure to have your own kids enhanced in a similar fashion. And in competitive sports, where the rewards are astronomical, it will be exceedingly difficult to stop athletes from trying to enhance themselves. Whatever ethical hurdles they present, Dr. Stock argues that we shouldn't dismiss genetic enhancements unless a modification is harmful. Or, as Nobel laureate James Watson has said, no one really has the guts to say it, but if we could make better human beings by knowing how to add genes, why shouldn't we? Post-human future? Advocates of transhumanism believe that when we meet advanced civilizations in space, they will have evolved to the point of modifying their biological bodies to accommodate the rigors of living on many different planets. To the transhumanists, advanced civilizations in outer space have most likely achieved a genetically and technologically enhanced future. So, if we ever meet aliens from space, we shouldn't be surprised if they are part biological and part cybernetic. Physicist Paul Davies goes one step further. My conclusion is a startling one. I think it very likely, in fact, inevitable, that biological intelligence is only a transitory phenomenon, a fleeting phase in the evolution of intelligence in the universe. If we ever encounter extraterrestrial intelligence, I believe it is overwhelmingly likely to be post-biological in nature, a conclusion that has obvious and far-reaching ramifications for SETI, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. And AI expert Rodney Brooks wrote, "My prediction is that by the year 2100, we will have very intelligent robots everywhere in our everyday lives, but we will not be apart from them. Rather, we will be part robot and connected with the robots." This debate over transhumanism is actually not a new one, but goes back to the last century, when the laws of genetics were first understood. One of the first people to articulate the idea was J.B.S. Haldane, who, in 1923, delivered a lecture, later published in book form, entitled Daedalus or Science and the Future. in which he predicted that science could use genetics to improve the condition of the human race. Many of his ideas seem tame today, but he was aware of the controversy they would generate and admitted that they might appear to be indecent and unnatural to someone who read about them for the first time, but that people might eventually accept them. Finally, the basic principles of transhumanism, that humanity should not have to endure nasty, brutish, and short lives, when science can relieve suffering by enhancing the human race, were first clearly laid out by Julian Huxley in 1957. There are several different views on what aspects of transhumanism we should pursue. Some believe that we should focus on mechanical means to enhance ourselves, such as exoskeletons, special goggles to improve our vision, memory banks that can be uploaded into our brains, and implants to increase our senses. Some believe that genetics should be used to eliminate lethal genes. Some believe they should be used to enhance our natural abilities. And some believe they should be used to increase our intellectual powers. Instead of taking decades to perfect certain genetic characteristics via selective breeding, as we have done with dogs and horses, we can accomplish whatever we want in one generation with genetic engineering. Progress in biotechnology is so rapid that ethical questions abound. And the sordid history of eugenics, including Nazi experiments to create a master race, presents a cautionary tale for anyone interested in altering humans. And it is now possible to take skin cells from a mouse and modify them genetically so that they can become egg and sperm cells, then mate them to produce a healthy mouse. Eventually, this process may be applied to humans. It would vastly increase the number of infertile couples who can successfully produce healthy children. But it also means that people could obtain your skin cells without your permission and create clones of you. Critics claim that only the rich and powerful will be able to benefit from this technology. Francis Fukuyama of Stanford has warned that transhumanism is among the world's most dangerous ideas, arguing that if the DNA of our descendants is altered, it will likely change human behavior, create more inequality, and hence undermine democracy. However, the history of technology would indicate that although the wealthy would have early access to these technological miracles, the cost will eventually drop to the point where even the average person can afford them. Other critics claim that it may be the first step towards splitting the human race and that the very definition of humanity is at stake. Perhaps various branches of genetically enhanced humans will populate different parts of the solar system and eventually diverge into separate species. And one can imagine that rivalries and even warfare may break out between different branches of the human race. Even the concept of Homo sapiens might be called into question. We will address this important question in Chapter 13, when we discuss the world perhaps thousands of years into the future. In Aldous Huxley's Brave New World, biotechnology is used to breed a race of superior beings, called the Alphas, who are destined to lead society from birth. Other embryos are deprived of oxygen, so that they become mentally deficient, and hence are bred to serve the Alphas. At the bottom of society are the Epsilons, who are bred to do menial manual labor. This society is a planned utopia that uses technology to satisfy all our needs, and everything appears orderly and peaceful. However, the entire society is based on oppression and misery for those bred to live at the bottom. Supporters of transhumanism admit that all these hypothetical scenarios must be taken seriously. But at this point, they argue that these concerns are purely academic. In spite of the avalanche of new research in biotechnology, much of this talk has to be placed in a larger context. Designer children do not yet exist, and the genes for many personality traits that parents may want for their children have not yet been found, and they may not exist at all. At present, not a single human behavior trait can be changed using biotechnology. Many argue that the fears of transhumanism run amok are premature, since the technology is still in the distant future. But given the rate at which discoveries are being made, late in this century genetic modifications will probably become a real possibility. So we have to ask the question, how far do we want to take this technology? Caveman Principle. As I've stated in previous books, I believe that the caveman or cavewoman principle comes into play and puts a natural limit on how far we will want to alter ourselves. Our basic personality has not changed much since we first emerged as modern humans 200,000 years ago. Although today we have nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons, our fundamental desires have remained the same. And what do we want? Surveys show that after our basic needs are met, we place a high value on the opinions of our peers. We want to look good, especially in front of the opposite sex. We want the admiration of our circle of friends. We might hesitate before altering ourselves too dramatically, especially if it makes us look different from those around us. Therefore, it is likely that we will only adopt enhancements if they raise our status in society. So though there will be pressure to genetically and electronically enhance our power, especially if we go into outer space and live in different environments, there may well be limits on how much alteration we desire, and that limitation will help keep us grounded. When Iron Man first appeared in the comics, he was a rather clunky, awkward-looking character. His armor was yellow, round, and ugly. In fact, he looked like a walking tin can. Young children could not identify with him, so the cartoonists later decided to give him a complete makeover. His armor became multicolored, sleek, and form-fitting, clearly enhancing the slim fighting figure of Tony Stark. As a result, his popularity rose dramatically. Even superheroes have to obey the caveman principle. Golden-era science fiction novels often portray the people of the future as having gigantic bald heads and tiny bodies. Other novels have us evolved into huge brains living in large vats of liquid. But who wants to live like that? I think the caveman principle would prevent us from evolving into creatures that we find repulsive. Instead, we would, in all likelihood, want the ability to increase our lifespan, memory, and intelligence without having to reform our basic human shape. For example, when playing games in cyberspace, we often have the freedom to choose an animated avatar to represent ourselves. Often, we choose avatars that make us attractive or appealing in some way, rather than grotesque or repulsive. It is also possible that all these technological wonders will backfire and reduce us to helpless children leading pointless lives. In the Disney cartoon WALL-E, humans live in spaceships where robots cater to every imaginable whim. Robots do all the heavy lifting and take care of every need, leaving humans with nothing to do but pursue silly pastimes. They become fat, spoiled, and useless, and spend their time with idle, pointless pursuits. But I think there is a baseline personality that is hardwired into our brains. For example, if drugs are legalized, then many experts estimate that perhaps 5% of the human race would become addicted. But the other 95%, seeing how drugs can limit or destroy a person's life, will steer clear of them, preferring to live in the real world rather than a drug-altered one. Similarly, once virtual reality is perfected, perhaps a similar number of people may prefer to live in cyberspace rather than in the real world. But it is not likely to be an overwhelming number. Remember that our cavemen ancestors wanted to be useful and helpful to others. It is hardwired into our genes. When I first read Asimov's Foundation trilogy as a child, I was surprised that human beings 50,000 years from now did not alter themselves. Surely, I thought, humans by then would have completely enhanced bodies, with gigantic heads, tiny withered bodies, and superpowers like in the comic books. But many of the scenes in the novel could have taken place on the Earth today. Looking back at that historic novel, I now realize that the caveman principle was probably at work. I imagine that in the future, people will have the option of putting on devices, implants, and accessories that give them superpowers and enhanced abilities. But afterward, they will take most of them off and interact normally in society. or if they permanently alter themselves, it will be in a way that enhances their standing in society. Who decides? When Louise Brown, the world's first test tube baby, was born in 1978, the technology that made it possible was denounced by many clergymen and columnists who believed that we were playing God. Today, there are more than 5 million test tube babies in the world. Your spouse or best friend may be one. People have decided to embrace this procedure, in spite of vigorous criticism. Similarly, when Dolly the sheep was first cloned in 1996, many critics denounced the technology as being immoral and even profane. Yet today, cloning is largely accepted. I asked Robert Lanza, an authority on biotechnology, when the first human cloning might be possible. He pointed out that no one has ever successfully cloned a primate, let alone a human. But he thought that human cloning would one day be possible. And if humans are ever cloned, it is likely only a tiny fraction of the human race will decide to clone themselves. Perhaps the only people who will clone themselves are rich people who have no heirs, or no heirs they particularly care for. They might clone themselves and give their wealth to themselves as children. Some have also denounced designer children, who are genetically modified by their parents. Yet today, it is commonplace for people to create several in vitro fertilized embryos and then discard the ones that have a potentially fatal mutation, such as Tay-Sachs disease. Thus, in one generation, we might conceivably eliminate these lethal traits from the gene pool. When the telephone was first introduced in the last century, there were vocal critics. They said it was unnatural to speak to some invisible, disembodied voice in the ether, rather than talking to people face to face, and that we would spend too much time on the phone, rather than talking to our children and close friends. The critics, of course, were right. We do spend too much time talking to disembodied voices in the ether. We don't talk to our children enough. But we love the telephone, and sometimes use it to talk to our children. People, rather than editorialists, decided for themselves that they wanted this new technology. In the future, as radical forms of technology that could enhance the human race become available, people will decide for themselves how far to take it. The only way in which these controversial technologies should be introduced is after democratic debate. Imagine for the moment someone from the time of the Inquisition visiting our modern world. Fresh from burning witches and torturing heretics, he might condemn all of modern civilization as being blasphemous. What seems unethical and even immoral today might seem quite ordinary and mundane in the future. In any event, if we are to explore the planets and stars, we will have to modify and enhance ourselves to survive the journey. And since there is a limit to how far we can terraform a distant planet, we will need to adjust ourselves to different atmospheres, temperatures, and gravity. So genetic and mechanical enhancements will be necessary. But so far, we have only discussed the possibilities of enhancing humanity. What happens when we explore outer space and encounter intelligent life forms that are completely different from us? Moreover, what happens if we meet civilizations that are millions of years ahead of us in technology? And if we do not encounter advanced civilizations in outer space, how might we become one ourselves? Although it is impossible to predict the culture, politics, and society of an advanced civilization, there is one thing that even alien civilizations will have to obey, and that is the laws of physics. So what does physics tell us about such advanced civilizations?
Originally, you were clay. From being mineral, you became vegetable. From vegetable, you became animal. And from animal, man. And you have to go through 100 different worlds yet. There are 1,000 forms of mind. Rumi. If you threaten to extend your violence, this earth of yours will be reduced to a burnt-out cinder. Your choice is simple. Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration. We shall be waiting for your answer. The decision rests with you. Klaatu, alien from The Day the Earth Stood Still. Chapter 12. Search for Extraterrestrial Life. One day, the aliens arrived. They came from distant lands no one had ever heard of, in strange, wondrous ships, using a technology that one could only dream of. They came with armor and shields, stronger than anything ever seen before. They spoke an unknown language and brought with them strange beasts. Everyone was wondering, who are they? Where do they come from? Some said they were messengers from the stars. Others whispered that they were like gods from heaven. Unfortunately, they were all wrong. The fateful year was 1519, when Montezuma met Hernán Cortés, and the Aztec and the Spanish empires collided. Cortés and his conquistadors were not messengers from the gods, but cutthroats lusting after gold and whatever they could plunder. It took thousands of years for the Aztec civilization to rise from the forest, but armed with only Bronze Age technology, it was overwhelmed and destroyed by Spanish soldiers in a matter of months. As we move into outer space, one lesson we can learn from this tragic example is that we should be cautious. The Aztecs, after all, were perhaps only a few centuries behind the Spanish conquistadors in their technology. If we encounter other civilizations in space, they might be so far ahead of us that we can only imagine the power they possess. If we were to enter a war with such an advanced civilization, it might be like King Kong meets Alvin the Chipmunk. Physicist Stephen Hawking has warned, "We only have to look at ourselves to see how intelligent life might develop into something we wouldn't want to meet," referring to the consequence of Christopher Columbus meeting Native Americans, he concludes, "That didn't turn out so well." Or as astrobiologist David Grinspoon says, "If you live in a jungle that might be full of hungry lions, do you jump down from your tree and go, yoo-hoo?" Hollywood movies, however, have brainwashed us into thinking that we can defeat the alien invaders if they are a few decades or centuries ahead of us in technology. Hollywood assumes that we can win by using some primitive, clever trick. In Independence Day, all we have to do is inject a simple computer virus into their operating system to bring them to their knees, as if the aliens use Microsoft Windows. Even scientists make this mistake, scoffing at the idea that an alien civilization living many light years away could even visit us. But that assumes that alien civilizations are only a few centuries ahead of us in technology. What happens if they are millions of years ahead of us? A million years is nothing but the blink of an eye in cosmic terms. New laws of physics and new technologies would open up when contemplating these incredible timescales. Personally, I believe that any advanced civilization in space will be peaceful. They might be eons ahead of us, which is plenty of time for them to resolve ancient sectarian, tribal, racial, and fundamentalist conflicts. But we must be prepared if they are not. Rather than reaching out and sending radio signals into space to announce our existence to any alien civilization, it might be more prudent to study them first. I believe we will make contact with an extraterrestrial civilization, perhaps sometime in this century. Instead of being merciless conquerors, they might be benevolent and willing to share their technology with us. This would then be one of the most important turning points in history, comparable to the discovery of fire. It could determine the course of human civilization for centuries into the future. SETI. Some physicists have actively tried to settle this issue by harnessing modern technology to scan the heavens for signs of advanced civilizations in space. This is called SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and involves scanning the heavens with the most powerful radio telescopes we possess to listen for transmissions from alien civilizations. At present, thanks to generous contributions from Paul Allen, co-founder of Microsoft, and others, the SETI Institute is constructing 42 state-of-the-art radio telescopes at Hat Creek, California, about 300 miles northeast